Homestyle Green, episode 252. Let's change the building code. G'day and welcome back to another episode of Homestyle Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. I'm Matthew Cutler-Welsh, host of the show, and this week I'm going to do something a little bit different. It's going to be just me, and we're going to be talking about how we can all make the New Zealand building code a little bit different in order to make better places to live for everyone. So there's a consultation open at the moment for changes to a few of the clauses of the New Zealand building code. And as Sean McIsaac pointed out recently on LinkedIn, the consultation isn't actually an effort to change the code. It's just asking about some specific changes to acceptable solutions for part of the code. So we'll get into some of that detail. But putting all this into context, it's been a pretty significant period over the last, even just the last week, with a bunch of world leaders getting together and talking about some of their climate change commitments. So I feel like New Zealand is definitely lagging behind in this space, and possibly Australia as well. And this is an opportunity for us to make some steps in the right direction and really pick up the pace a little bit and get in line with the rest of the world. We like to think of ourselves as leaders in some respects when it comes to things like building really fast sailing boats or playing rugby or even launching rocket ships into space, building amazing online accounting systems. You know, we have really great examples here in New Zealand of leadership, world leadership, but the way we build our houses is lacking quite far behind. And I'm not just talking about sustainability and energy efficiency. I'm just talking about buildings that are fit for purpose. You know, we are still building and designing buildings today that will have condensation on the inside. They'll be cold. They'll be way too expensive to heat. And there's no need for that. So we know how to fix things. We know how to build better. So let's get on and do it. Now, there are some positive changes in this consultation, and I got a group of people together online last Friday to have a bit of a chat, and I'm going to be doing that over the next few weeks leading up until the close of this consultation period in the middle of May. So if you'd like to be part of that conversation, please reach out. Email me, matthew@homestylegreen.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, and I'll send you an invite along. I'd love to have as many people along to that as possible so that we can present a united front to MBIE. MBIE is not just some big faceless organization that pumps out obscure rules. They're an organization full of people, and people are generally good, and I know that a lot of people at MBIE are good because I know some of them, and people generally want to do good things. So a big part of this consultation, just like any other, is to give those good people the confidence that what they're proposing is going to be accepted and acceptable by the population and the industry. So that's us, and that's our job right now, is to give those people the confidence that they can make some bold moves to improve the standard of building, and that they'll be supported. We'll support them. It won't be a big battle for them. Now, they will have a bit of a battle, and part of what I want to do is have a little bit of a look around the industry and say, who needs to make a submission, and which, you know, if you're involved in the building industry, I strongly encourage you to do that. But who else do we need to persuade either to make a submission, or who do we need to listen to understand their concerns? And I'm thinking primarily about product suppliers, manufacturers, or maybe it's builders who are seeking to just build at the lowest price because they see that affordability is a really key issue. How can we listen to those people, understand what their concerns are, and ensure that we consider those factors, but we move in the direction that we need to move to make the building code better, to make our houses better, and to reduce the energy efficiency, to the energy demands, and therefore the emissions of our building stock. Now, building stock is really important in New Zealand. It accounts for around 20% of our total emissions, which is nearly half that of the proportion of emissions of other countries. A lot of buildings in other places account for about 40% of emissions. But those are sort of statistics, and they can skew things a little bit, because if we look at just our cities, then our buildings contribute to a much higher proportion there of the emissions just in those locations. Transport's obviously a really big one for us. We've got to move things around our long, skinny island. And of course, we have lots and lots of cows and sheep. And the dairy industry is a big part of our total emissions. But I want to focus on the bit that we can make a difference, that we can influence in our industry, and that is our buildings. And I strongly believe that our influence isn't just limited to the 5 million of us on our little island down in the South Pacific, because we continually have an influence that's far beyond just our little island here. You think of the All Blacks and the influence they have around the world. Think of our recent success in America's Cup. You know, we are good at punching above our weight, and when it comes to a lot of sporting achievements, business achievements, a lot of successes around the world. Yet our buildings are lagging far, far behind our comparison climates and our comparison countries and cities of similar economic status as we are here in New Zealand. And there's no need for that. It's time for us to catch up. So in terms of what's being asked for in this current round of feedback from MB, there are 7 proposals, and I'm really just focusing on the first one or two because they're the ones to do with energy efficiency of housing and small buildings. That's proposal one. Proposal two is energy efficiency of large buildings, and then there's some stuff about heating and ventilation and cooling, and also some minor tweaks around the clauses to do with structure of the buildings. There are some changes to some additions for allowing or requiring natural light, particularly for high density housing. And if that's something you're interested in, I highly encourage you to also look at proposal 4. And proposal 5 includes some issues around weather tightness testing for high density housing. But the ones I really want to focus on are mostly around the first proposal. And the first of these is looking at changes to the number of climate zones that we have. In the current version of the building code, we have 3 zones for the whole country, and the whole of the South Island is climate zone 3. Now, this is a bit nonsensical because it puts Nelson, which is one of the sunniest cities in the country, in the same climate zone as Queenstown, which is an alpine environment. In that same climate zone, you also have Christchurch, which experiences frosts in winter, but can have really hot, dry winds and also humid days with those strong nor'westers in the summertime. You know, it's not uncommon for Christchurch to have hotter days than Auckland occasionally. And you've also got the massive rainfall that they experience on the west coast, on the western side of the Southern Alps there, all classed as the same climate zone, which means they have the same requirement. That means that in Nelson, you need the same amount of insulation as that you can get away with in Queenstown, which is kind of ridiculous. So it's nice to know that they've doubled the number of climate zones referred to from 3 to 6. Now, some would argue that 6 is still not enough, and in fact, Passive House recognises around 16 climate zones across the country. And you can still design to a much higher level of accuracy and finer granularity than those 6, but 6 is much better than the measly 3 that they have at the moment. So that's proposal number one, bit of a no-brainer, and as far as I can tell, I would encourage them to go further, but I think the positive affirmation of that to move beyond the 3 to the 6 is definitely a good step forward. Now, the bulk of the other changes for this proposal are to do with increasing the levels of insulation in the roof, for windows, floors, and the walls of buildings. Now, there's a few things in this. Firstly, there's a recognition in the consultation documents that there are some comparisons that are relevant when we look at different cities around the world. And this is significant because a lot of agencies have been a little bit guilty of thinking of New Zealand as being completely unique, which is true. You know, we have everywhere's unique in its own way. Everywhere's a little bit special, but there is a lot that we have in common with other places around the world. And it's not that hard to find cities that are very similar to cities across New Zealand with very similar climates. And it makes sense to do this because then we don't have to reinvent the wheel and redo a bunch of calculations and just kind of waste a lot of time and energy on some good work that's already been done. It's also is a bit of a benchmark of where we're sitting, which is I think another important part and a positive aspect of this consultation is a real acknowledgement that New Zealand is significantly below those levels that we can compare ourselves with around the world. Our current requirements for insulation are pretty much half that of places like Wales and Ireland, California, England, and indeed some parts in Australia as well. So this just lays out that very clearly that we are currently very, very low in our requirements. And the proposals are made up of three options. One, which says let's go halfway to being comparable to those other places. Option two is its word is sort of being on par or comparable. If you actually look at the figures, it's questionable as to whether option two is indeed comparable. In my mind, they're still a bit below those similar cities. And then option three, again, they're saying it's going further, but if you actually look at the numbers, it's only really going further in some of those climate zones. In fact, I would label option three as pretty much meeting those similar targets in comparable climates around the world. So I think we need to definitely jump straight to option three. I don't think option one and option two are a good idea in any way, shape, or form. I can imagine that there might be some pushback from the industry to say, oh, it's too big of a leap to go to option three straight away. I think that it's totally achievable. I think that that will create some angst and there'll be some changes required, but that's kind of the point. You know, that's what needs to happen. We need to recognize how far behind the rest of the world we are and make a big change. So I'm definitely advocating for at least going to option three. There is, however, a fundamental problem here. And I'm a little bit torn as to how best to deal with this because on one hand, I want to encourage steps in the right direction. But part of the whole methodology here is flawed. Now, we talk about the building code as being a performance-based code, which means that we're interested in how the building actually performs as opposed to a prescriptive code. But all that we've talked about for the last 5 minutes is a prescription. And this comes down to the implementation of our building code, which in reality occurs through acceptable solutions of the individual clauses. And over time, acceptable solutions have become the way things are done. And they kind of make sense because it means that instead of a designer or a builder sitting down and having to calculate, do a thermal model for every single house, it's basically the government saying, well, we've done the numbers, and if you put in this amount of insulation in this particular location, you should be okay. And we'll give you a consent if you include this amount of insulation, you won't have to do any calculations. Or if you do the verification method, we'll give you this sort of simplified calculation. You just plug in a few numbers and she'll be right. It's a classic, she'll be right, literally. And that has meant that what has originally designed as a performance-based code has become more and more prescriptive in its implementation, because people just rely now mostly on acceptable solutions. So that's the first issue with this, that we're not actually looking at performance. We're just assuming that putting in enough insulation is going to be enough to get our code of compliance, our certificate, and we can move on. We know from evidence from way back, and also some recent research done by Vernie Ryan and Beacon Pathway. Also want to shout out to Guy Penny, who did some of the legwork for that research, was that we have a staggering amount of timber in our framing and our houses, which means wherever there's timber, there's not insulation. And because timber has a much lower R value than, particularly our Pinus radiata that we use, has a much lower R value than any fibrous or blown in or wool, natural wool insulation, the effective R value that we're getting is way, way below these numbers in a practical level. So even if we have a nice drawing that assumes around 10 to 15% timber across a wall, and we put in enough R value, we do the calculations and it is assumed to pass, we know that in actual fact, currently, our walls are up to 37% timber. So the effective R value that we're achieving is half of what is actually being specified and designed for. So there's a good argument to say that we need to double these numbers again, that even the ones that are being proposed, if we want the building to actually have those R values as the overall component, we need to be massively increasing the amount of material that we're specifying and putting in these. So that's one problem. The other issue is that I know from the work that I've been involved with at Proclima and looking at the science of infiltration permeability, that there's no acknowledgement here of the influence of air movement through our walls. And until we start measuring air permeability, air tightness, we're going to be missing out on a lot of the value of our insulation, because air is just simply moving through the building envelope. And there's a really simple way of fixing this. We just need to start measuring air tightness of the buildings. If we required a blow door test for every single new building that was built or every significant renovation that was done, we would very quickly become aware of the precise level of air infiltration that's occurring in our buildings, and we do something about it, because we know human nature, what gets measured gets changed. We can't change what we're not measuring. And so my proposal would be, as a starting point, that we just require blow door testing to be done on all new buildings. In time, we definitely need to introduce standards like they do in most of the rest of the world. New Zealand's one of the only places that doesn't have air tightness requirements. So it's not something to be scared of. We have the technology. We have the capacity. We've been training blow door testers. We have a lot of this equipment that is being used now for testing facades, and we have people out there doing tests on passive house or low energy buildings. So we know how to do it. We have people trained up. We're ready to go in this stuff. And until we start testing the permeability of our buildings, we are leaving a lot unknown, and we're leaving a lot of gaps in our buildings, and we're losing out on the true R value, the true insulation, and the true performance of what our buildings could be achieving. So there's a little bit in there. I'm keen to discuss with people over the next few weeks how best to approach this. I definitely think we need to endorse option 3 at a bare minimum, but I think we could also go beyond that. just as a side note, even the proposal of going halfway is a little bit laughable. It would be a little bit like us showing up to a rugby grand final and only putting half of our team on the field and saying, oh, yeah, we're only going to aspire to going halfway when we're comparing ourselves to the rest of the world. Or if we raced in the last America's Cup with only one foil on one side of the boat, it's kind of ridiculous that we would even propose the option one there to acknowledge that we are so far below the rest of these the comparative cities and then suggest that we should only go halfway to meeting them. It kind of perplexes me. But anyway, let's move on. I want to acknowledge the great work that's been done already and has been done for a number of years by a lot of organisations. And part of the session I had on Friday was to acknowledge these people and also think about ways that we can present a united front. Because a lot of us want very similar things. We have different ways of talking about it and going about it. But the more we can present a united front and talk about these things together, then we can give that confidence to MB to say, yep, we've got the industry support and we can go ahead with some bold moves. So starting off, we've got Homestar is about to launch version 5. And version 5 has some significant changes in there. It talks a lot about airtightness. It includes points for doing an airtightness test. It considers some overheating, which I know has been a criticism of not just the building code, but also version 5 of not also considering summer overheating alongside being cold in the winter. There are lots of significant changes in there. So if you haven't had a chance to look at it, you soon will. And I encourage people to have a look at version 5 of Homestar. We've had the Healthy Homes Standard and changes to tenancy recently, which has required landlords to up the insulation, include ventilation, and look at heating of their homes. These are really positive steps. They're small changes, but they're positive steps in the right direction. We've had the Climate Change Commission doing their work and along with the other work out of MB, the Building for Climate Change, has been a much more significant acknowledgement of the issues around climate change and how the building sector contributes to that, both in terms of embodied energy but also in-use energy, operational energy of buildings. Superhome Movement is coming up for 5 years, 6 years now that Bob's been doing the great work down there in Christchurch and beyond. Damien's recently done an incredible amount of work last year in the creation of the Healthy Home Design Guide, which is available online. You can go and have a look at it. It's a great resource, got lots of detail in there, and is also suggesting some progressive steps pretty much towards a passive house type building envelope over the next few years. Speaking of passive house, we have Finns, which has been around now in New Zealand for over 10 years. And we've got getting a lot more awareness of the International Passive House Standard. We're nearly up to about 40 certified passive houses in the country, about to be a whole bunch more as we see some different typologies of buildings also getting the certification and being designed to the Passive House Standard. So that's really exciting. Beacon Pathway, I mentioned Vernie Ryan and Guy Penny who helped out. Vernie's been with Beacon Pathway for many, many years. They built their Now homes over a decade ago, and those continue. There's only two of them, but they continue to provide really valuable information of operational use of buildings that are designed and constructed above the building code at the time, and how people have enjoyed living in those and enjoyed the benefits of having much lower running costs, but also a much healthier environment. So we know how to do this stuff. It's been proven not just internationally for years and years, but also locally here in New Zealand. Kāinga Ora, a lot of people in the building industry who have been around for a little while will have had experience with housing New Zealand. And I just want to acknowledge that Kāinga Ora is a very different organisation from what Housing New Zealand used to be and other institutions before that. They have done some amazing work. I mean, we need to give credit for the buildings around the houses around New Zealand that have become part of the sort of urban landscape and certain suburbs. You can sort of pick out an old house in New Zealand building. They're built to last, and a lot of them have. They are doing some really good work inside Kāinga Ora. I know that some of the people involved are really passionate about looking at the work of the Climate Change Commission. They're really conscious now of those, not just the embodied energy, but the operational energy, creating homes that are healthy and are going to be helping us meet our climate change goals. So there is some interesting work going on there, including a commitment to Homestar, which I think is going to be a bit of a game changer for the industry as well. And I also want to highlight the team at Oculus, Sean McIsaac and others, who spearheaded a bit of a movement to bring Canada's Energy Step Code into the New Zealand context. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the Energy Step Code because I think it's really, really exciting. It's kind of obvious once you've seen it that we need to implement it, but I also understand some of the challenges in getting it implemented. I had the privilege just recently of interviewing Robin Walk, who works for BC Hydro, and she's on the committee of the Energy Step Code in British Columbia. And her interview will actually be coming out pretty much the same time as this, but on the Passive House podcast as part of the Passive House Accelerator. It's a fascinating discussion about how the Energy Step Code came to be and all the things that had to come into play and fall into place for it to get established in British Columbia. But I'm quite excited about this as an option for New Zealand, but also building codes around the world, because it's useful to achieve an outcome, but it's also really beneficial for the industry because it helps signal where things are going to be heading and allows manufacturers, designers, builders to align their business plan with those known targets with a really good timeline out to, in this case, 2032. That's really helpful for industry because it doesn't mean that they get freaked out by some politician saying, yeah, we're going to implement these big changes and you've got to meet these targets in the next 6 months or 12 months or whenever it is. It lays out a roadmap of where people need to be. And when this gets implemented, what often happens is that industry then actually moves a little bit faster because they're seeing where the goalposts are. They can make their business plans, they can make their investment decisions. If they're upgrading plant or they're changing their systems, they can do that with confidence because they know where the targets are going to be, what type of materials they're going to have to be supplying in order for the industry to meet those targets at set points in time into the future. If done properly and with good buy-in from all of government and all of industry, then a step code like this can be kind of immune to election cycles as well, which is really another important aspect of this, is that we need something that's going to give stability and predictability to the whole industry, and they're not going to be at the whim of the next government to change the direction and everyone then has to retool or retrain. So the Energy Step Code, basically, in Canada's case, it says by the year 2032, we want all new construction to be net zero ready. And from that futures point, they've then gone back to when they first started implementing this, which was 2017, and say, what are the steps that we need to do in order to get to that point in the year 2032? And then they've just stepped it up gradually over that period of time. And Sean and the team at Oculus have created a similar version for this for New Zealand. You can find that at energystepco.nz. And it looks at starting at the year 2020 with the performance standards. Let's have a look. So what they've beautifully labeled TUI, which is the total usage intensity at around 200 kilowatt hours per square meter per year in the year 2020, stepping down progressively each year from 2020 through to 2032, down to 75 kilowatt hours per square meter per year. And then they have another measure called TEDI with another beautiful logo, which is a measurement of thermal energy demand intensity. That's what TEDI stands for, thermal energy demand intensity. And that steps down from 75 kilowatt hours per square meter per year in the year 2020 down to 15 kilowatt hours per square meter per year, basically aligning with Passive House by the year 2032. So I'll put some links up to that. You can have a look. It's a really great approach and one that I fully endorse. The main two features of that, once again, are that it's predictable because it's putting a horizon down and saying this is where we want to be at this particular point of time in the future. And it's focusing on the performance. There's nothing in the Energy Step Code that stipulates an R value. All it's saying is this is what your building must do in terms of how it performs. So there's some assumptions there of the internal temperature, the humidity, the internal conditions that it must be able to maintain. And it must be able to do that using no more than these specified amounts of energy. And as we approach 2032, any new building has to be able to do that with less and less energy. If that sounds familiar, it should. It's pretty much moving houses towards the Passive House standard by 2032. There's just so much I like about that. I like the fact that with 2032 is a quite a close but achievable timeline. It's not something a lot further off like 2050, which has been popular with politicians in the past because they can kind of make these amazing statements and then know that they're not going to be around to be accountable for that. 2032, people making these rules now, they're probably going to have to be accountable for that. And we're all going to have to be accountable for that less than 10 years' time or around 10 years' time. So that's pretty exciting stuff. And that focus on the actual performance is really the direction that we need to go rather than just relying on the assumption that stuffing more and more insulation or requiring more insulation on specified on a plan is necessarily going to have any impact on the actual performance of the house. Another great thing about all the work that Robin Walk and the team did with the British Columbia version of the Energy Step Code is they shared a lot of their learning. There's a great document which is simply on that, is Lessons from the BC Energy Step Code. I recommend having a look at it. It's not a massive read, but there's some really important points in there that they make about how they got this off the ground and how to get it implemented, because this could be a game changer for the world. It's being rolled out across British Columbia. Other people are paying attention to it because it just makes so much sense. And we should definitely be adopting something similar for the sake of our industry, for the sake of consumers, and for the sake of the planet. We should be doing something similar here in New Zealand and also in Australia. So check that out. I'll put a link to that. That's the Lessons from the BC Energy Step Code. I'd really like us to think about how we can take those lessons and implement them into the New Zealand Building Code. I also just want to do a quick shout out to the team again at Passive House Accelerator. Zach has been very busy putting together the Passive House Policy Summit, which will be around about the same time this podcast drops. It's scheduled for April 26th in the US, 7 p.m., which will be Tuesday 27th in New Zealand and Australia. So New Zealand, that'll be airing at 11 a.m. And Australian East Coast, it'll be 9 a.m. for you on Tuesday the 27th. But like a lot of the stuff that goes on at the Pacific Accelerator, there will be some videos and content available after the fact. So if you've missed the boat on that one, don't worry. You'll be able to check out a lot of the content, and also you'll be able to hear my interview with Robin Walk from tomorrow onwards. Just check that out at the Passive House podcast, part of the Passive House Accelerator. All right, so that about just about rounds it up. Main points are that consultation is currently open for changes to some of the important parts of the building code. At this stage, it's really just looking at those changes to the parts of the acceptable solution, and I'm more focusing on the first proposal, which is to do with the climate zones and, as they've stated, the changes to the R value. I really want to get together with people so that we can present a united front on this and give MB confidence that we do want them to move fast and far. We want them to make bold moves. So I'm thinking at this stage that we suggest that option three should be a definite no-brainer. We should throw out option one and not option two. There's no point in us only fielding half of our rugby team against others around the world. But we should also be looking beyond that. We should be looking at introducing requirements for air tightness testing, because we can and because we need to. And we should be looking at having a much longer term view of thinking about where we want to get to in such a time as, say, 2030 or 2032, and making a very clear and predictable signal for the whole industry of what the steps are going to be like between here, where we are today, and achieving that goal in a decade's time. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you for listening in. Thanks for hanging in there. If you're still around, really appreciate it. If you do want to be involved in that conversation, then please do reach out. Email me, matthew@homestylegreen.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'd love to get your input and also find out what you need to do, what would be useful in terms of templates, submissions, data, research, whatever it is that would make it easier for you to do a submission and help support these changes to the New Zealand Building Code. Well, thank you very much. I'm Matthew Cutler-Welsh. Thanks for listening in. Now go make a better place to live.